CliffCentral.com.
Are you with me? Are you with me?
Yes, indeed. We are with you. CliffCentral.com. It is 14 minutes after 8. It's a Wednesday morning. There's lots going on. The Gauteng ANC, just yesterday, the Gauteng ANC saying that they think that the president should do the right thing. And when they were asked what they meant by the president doing the right thing, a spokesperson for the Gauteng ANC, the PEC, the Provincial Executive Council, said he should resign. I mean, that's some real, that's some serious factionalism if ever I've seen it. And of course they said no, it's not factionalism, they're just allowed to have their opinion and they're speaking to their own branches and their own regions and trying to figure out what the next step should be. And that's how the ANC works, according to the Gauteng ANC, that it's a democratic organization from the bottom all the way up to the top. If the branches decide they don't want a president who is constitutionally compromised, then they will stand up for themselves and they'll make their opinions known. And they don't need to be writing letters to the Secretary General. They need to be able to speak out as branches, as regions, and as a province. That's the kind of ANC we haven't heard from in a long time. So perhaps it indicates something exciting going on within that party. For people who love the ANC, for people who care about what the ANC stands for, and that heart which really stopped beating for a while for some people, may have just got a little CPR from the Gauteng ANC. Who knows? And of course, if the president does leave, who do we put in place of him? Anybody got an idea? Anyone got any plans?
Well, I mean, wouldn't Cyril Ramaphosa automatically be moved into that position?
Probably. I mean,
he is the deputy president,
right? That's what happened when Thabo Mbeki went. Kgalema Motlanthe was the deputy president. He was put in. But what if, here's the interesting scenario, what if Jacob Zuma remains the president of the ANC, but is no longer president of the country?
The Republic, yeah.
So what happens then? Isn't that untenable? Isn't that why they said Thabo Mbeki had to go? Because you can't be president of the ANC and someone else is president of the country.
Sure.
I mean, this is very exciting. There's stuff happening before our very eyes. This is probably the most interesting year politically since 1994. I think it's fair to say. I don't know. I don't have the long lens of history that our next guest does, because she really has experienced an incredible amount in her life. She has stories to tell. She's a fascinating person. I've spoken to her a couple of times, and she's doing a great show at the moment called For Anna Dinger. She is Ruda Landman. Yeah, we have to give you the full fanfare. How are you, Ruda?
Good morning. Fine,
nice,
thank you.
Nice to see you.
And glad to see that you're the same insensitive beast that I know so well.
Well, have you seen Caitlyn Jenner's feet? Come on. I don't think you've ever...
You're just jealous.
Yeah. You can see right through me. I'm not even going to argue with you. But I'll bet you any amount of money you've never watched the Kardashians. You don't even know their names.
I'm afraid I don't. There are big gaps in my education.
I love you for that, Ruda. Ben loves you.
I must say, I wear an 8.5 shoe. So don't worry.
Okay.
The only problem is that my feet were that size when I was in standard 6.
Yeah, then you get teased,
right? That is uncomfortable.
Right?
Yes, because then you do get teased, yeah.
You know, by now it's fine. Mm. I mean, you know, they're my feet. Fine.
Yeah.
But when you are 13, it's seriously uncomfortable.
Kids are the meanest. There's something in everyone that they'll criticize, and kids will find that one thing that makes you different, and they will tear you apart for it, no matter who you are. It's bizarre, and they don't get any better. I think that there are still kids in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
I spoke to someone called Emma Sadler the other day.
Oh, yes.
She's a fantastic woman. She wrote a book.
She's an ex-girlfriend of mine.
Oh, good. Mm. You have good taste.
Well, they had.
Well, okay. I suppose that she decided that, to honor her own taste and walk away.
Yeah, you know it. You know it well. Go on. Yes, go on. This is going really well, this interview. Thanks so much for coming, Ruda Landman. Everybody, Ruda Landman, it's time to wrap it up. Yes?
No, you know that she wrote a book called Don't Film Yourself Having Sex.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's about how to be really careful around social media.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points she made in an interview that I found fascinating was, be very careful, proud parents and proud mothers especially, of what you put out there about your children. Because a naked 2-year-old is cute, but that 2-year-old will grow up to be 14 and there will be bullies in his or her class.
Oh boy.
And that picture is out there forever.
I've never thought about that. I would immediately think, well, you know, there might be some sicko who's like, you know, turned on by 2-year-olds, and that's a problem. But I didn't think about the fact that they'll be bullied later on for their naked pictures that their mom took when they were a baby.
Yeah. No, it's frightening.
Wow.
You know, every time you put out a picture on Instagram or wherever, oh, look how sweet this is, be very careful.
Yeah, you see, we don't even know how other human beings are really very evil. They will find ways to torment us. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, not the majority, but there are those.
So look, I mean, the last time we had you here, we just started. You remember? I mean, we've tried to make the studio a little more comfortable since then. We had that enormous big table in here. I think you were on at the same time as Trevor Gumby, which was horrifying for both of us. Not for Trevor.
It's been a while, eh? When was it?
It's 2 years ago almost.
2 years ago.
Well, we'll turn 2 in May.
You seem to be going well. Congratulations.
It is. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I mean, we're still here.
Yeah. He's wearing a T-shirt saying, no regrets.
No, well, that's exactly how I feel. And what have you been up to? I mean, let's find out about the immediate past rather than the stories from the hinterland.
You know, stuff. My husband says to me, why are you so busy? You're supposed to be retired. And it's and I say, I don't know. It just happens. Every week I say, next week it will be over and then I can be relaxed.
Right.
I'm going to hang out today with my son, who's 29 and a financial advisor. And between jobs. So he's giving his day to his mum, which
is fantastic. Oh, that's nice. So he's going to take you out for lunch and that kind of... Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely.
Sons don't do that enough for their mums, right? When he said to you, Mom, I want to do this, did you think, oh, no, there's something terribly wrong?
No. He's going on a road trip with his dad next week, so I think he's feeling guilty.
Listen, I've got to tell you, this is a fairly impressive family. Your family. Your husband is a very smart man.
Yes, he is.
He's a professor and an academic and a genius of a kind.
Yeah, he's very, very clever.
You're very smart. If your kids weren't smart, they would have had to go to the orphanage, I'm sure. But they are, right?
There's just one.
Just the one. Your son, very clever.
And he is. Of course, I believe that a mother's first duty in the world is to think that her child walks on water and tell him so often. Yeah. So I do.
And I mean, there was never any point in his life where he felt, look, I've got these two brilliant parents. I have to live up to something.
Or how would I know? I know that he kept it quiet from his girlfriend that I was his mother for about 3 months.
Really?
when she
found out, was she shocked?
She said to me, Danny, yes, hot up YouTube. And I said, what?
So she didn't know you from Carte Blanche or anything. She'd seen you on YouTube.
Well, I think it is Carte Blanche that is on YouTube. I don't really know.
Well, listen, I've got to say something to you. I watched an old clip of you and Derek in the old days of Carte Blanche when it started in the 1980s?
Yeah, 88.
Right. You have not done very badly in terms of the aging game. You've turned out pretty damn well, Rudo. I mean, what are you
Thank
on here?
You
What's
so
this
much.
Elixir of youth that you want to share with us?
Happiness.
Really?
Happiness and exercise.
Okay.
That's my answer.
Does happiness also have to be a ritual thing, like exercise? Because exercise, if you don't do it regularly, you fall out of...
You know, another in this doing the Veranderdinge interviews, because Veranderdinge started on Sunday, and my producer, Alan, who's your good friend, will never forgive me if I don't give it a fat punt now.
Right.
Started on Sunday evening on CakeNet at 6:30, and my part of the show consists mainly of one-on-one interviews with all kinds of fascinating people.
Mm-hmm.
We started with Patricia DeLille on Sunday. We're going to close the series with Jesse Duarte. But all kinds of other people in between, like the beautiful Minky this coming Sunday.
Okay.
Minky van der Westhuizen.
Yeah.
But then I spoke to Mark Lothring. And Mark said something interesting. He said, I asked, when did you realize that you could make people laugh? And he said, actually, what he wants to do, what he likes doing, and what he realized at school already, is that he hates conflict and he wants people to feel good. And that is what he's doing. He's making people kind of stand back from all the noise and all the unhappiness that is floating about and conflict and whatever. Make them feel good. And I said, so do you think that happiness and feeling good and being positive is a choice? And he said, absolutely. You get up in the morning and you decide, what am I going to focus on today? The good stuff, the bright side,
mm-hmm.
or everything that comes my way that is negative?
That takes a huge amount of self-actualization, though. It doesn't just happen. I mean, for Mark Lottering, that's digging deep. Normally a comedian will say, yeah, I just like making people laugh.
Yeah.
But he's found out. He's done a lot of soul searching, I think.
Yeah, he's such a great guy. And there's such a depth.
Mm.
He will say things like, I'm on this, the first evening he went on stage on his 30th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He gave it to himself as a birthday present, rented a small venue in Cape Town. And he said to his friends, you will come and we will do all kinds of happy things. But in between, I will be on stage and you will watch me for 30 minutes. And and he said he felt it working.
Yeah.
And there was so much love in the room. It, I just find it such an interesting...
You can feel those things. Yeah. They're very real things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is why I said to you, is happiness something you have to practice? Like you have to, you said happiness and fitness are the two things. So fitness, we more or less understand, or exercise, keeping the body going. Now, this is happiness is related to the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an exercise you do when you get out of bed? Do you go, okay, it's... Oh, 6 a.m, I have to go and see that idiot Gareth Cliff now. How could my day possibly get off to a worse start? But you put yourself in a state of happiness.
Well, it's kind of not sweating the small stuff. And, you know, what is. I have to get here from Melville to Rivonia. Mike sent me an SMS yesterday and said, please come be there at 7:30 to avoid the traffic.
Right.
And I sent him an SMS back and said, that is impossible at that time of the morning. I will be there at 7:30. So you get into the car and you can either say, oh, blah, 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 fill
traffic,
in the blanks,
yeah.
Traffic. Or you take a mug of coffee with you.
Mm-hmm.
You switch on the radio. You do whatever. And you're in the traffic for 45 minutes.
You look at some people.
Minutes.
Yeah, you just realize that's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. Whether you sit behind that steering wheel swearing at your taxis, or whether you kind of zen about it, it'll take the same amount of time.
Yeah.
You're not going to change that.
That is so right.
You know, and I look at people in relationships. Some people, someone else we spoke to on Veranderdinge, Jo van Eerden, she's the head of the Afrikaans newspapers now, lovely yes. lady. And she said, don't accept all the invitations, every invitation to a battle that comes your way.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Pick your battles.
Right.
Pick your battles.
Yeah.
She's
you know,
exactly right.
You don't have to join everyone that's out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned that at the beginning of this year, too. And you know what? Social media, it can be very distracting and unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's not always necessary that it's part of your life.
Mm.
I mean, for some people, it's the be-all and the end-all. Some people have only ever had a career on social media. They don't actually have a real job. And I wonder sometimes whether that isn't a problem as much as it's a great way for us to communicate with each other, to find out what people
yeah.
think about things. And, you know, there's still tremendously positive things about the internet as a forum for communication, and even things like Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. But we do need to be cognizant of this balance.
No, I think like anything else, it's... you know, a newspaper can be a good newspaper or a bad newspaper or in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, I don't think you can say social media are XYZ.
Yeah.
It's an instrument. It's, you can use a knife to prepare vegetables for tonight's meal mm-hmm. or to put into someone's heart. It's, you choose what you do with it.
The tool itself is not
yeah.
something that can be blamed.
Neutral.
Yeah. Now, you were a journalist for many years. I mean, you started writing for a number of newspapers. We don't have to go back all the way into the CV, but you've got an incredible depth and breadth of experience here. Do you feel like when you pick up a newspaper or a magazine now in South Africa, that the quality of the journalism is to your liking, or do you think when you complain that you just sound like one of those people who just hasn't dealt well with change? Because I sometimes feel there's a lot of criticism around certain things in journalism. You know, you hear Anton Haber and you hear a lot of people who really are very smart and have watched it progress. Some of the stuff they say is legitimate complaining, as in just old people who don't like change. And some of it is actually about the quality of the stuff. It used to be hard to be a journalist.
I think it's hard. If I think of when I started and I worked for a morning newspaper and you had one story a day and the deadline was 5:36-ish in the evening, and if your story wasn't done, it wasn't done, and you went home and you could switch off until tomorrow morning at 10. Journalists can't do that now. It's really a 24-hour job. So in that sense, I think it's harder.
Okay.
What I miss in, and I don't know if that's better or worse than it was before, but what I miss sometimes is the big picture. You know, a newspaper, about 2-3 months ago, one of the Sunday newspapers, they gave me a story about urban young urban black people who have a yearning for land. What did they have? Three young people who said, it would be nice to own some land.
And then they said that that's a sample of the whole country.
Yeah, this is now the trend. And reading it carefully, it was very clear that those young people were not going to go and grow beans.
No.
It was a kind of vague, you know, it would be nice to have a piece of paradise out there that I can think of as mine.
Sure.
But then they put a fat headline on it, which seems to say that this is the trend. This is what young urban. I mean, Mabale, do you want a piece of land to go and live on?
No, not to live on, just to build my mansion on.
Yeah, we all want that.
A huge, you know, mansion. That's all I ask for. But is this because also, you know, sometimes journalists are encouraged to sensationalize these days because it's all about the headlines grabbing the reader and, you know, getting the reader
everyone's
to be pulled
really,
in.
Yeah, they're competing for attention rather than for truth or for fact or
I don't think that was ever different.
Really?
Well, maybe when the newspaper started and it was just all small print on the front page and advertisements didn't look any different. But it's, I mean, you need to grab the audience. You need to hold the audience. And if you look at what's happening with circulation figures, all print journal, print media, the circulation figures are just falling, and have done so for the past, I don't know, 10 years or so. So here and internationally, it's a huge, what's the word I'm looking at? A question mark. How are we going to make journalism last? How are we going to pay for journalism? Because the consumer of journalism, there I was sitting out there now on the internet, going from this website to that website, getting my morning news for free.
Absolutely.
So how are we going to pay journalists? Because the print media really don't make money anymore.
No.
And I don't see how it's going to play out. It will.
It'll figure out its own way.
It will figure out its own way. But
you're saying you don't know the answers.
I'm on the board of Media 24, and it's a huge problem. It's a huge question mark, let me put it that way, you know, to navigate this transition.
Tell me, you actually did military service for a while, didn't you?
Yes, Cliff, don't don't hold it against me. I was 17.
No, sure, but I mean, it's unusual that because not all women did military service.
No, but it was 19.
I think that's kind of cool.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't think it was so cool. I think
what
if,
made you make that decision?
If it was 10 years late, I turned 17 on the day I wrote maths in matric.
Okay.
So I was a child, and you know, if it was 20 years later, when my son was in the same similar circumstance, he took a gap year,
mm-hmm.
went overseas,
right.
sold gas and electricity. Poor child. And my sister-in-law went and worked as an au pair in Sweden. That's much cooler.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to carry a weapon around. You got to learn to march, all kinds of exciting things that a lot of girls don't get to do.
They tell you every single thing to do, even what to dress.
Really?
What to put on.
Yeah, well, of course, uniform.
So as long as you don't resist, it is the easiest thing in the world to do. Because they were never going to put us in harm's way.
No.
Not then.
And how many other women were there that were doing military service at that time? There couldn't have been a lot.
Well, that year, there were just 120 girls. And we went to the Civil Defense College in George for 10 months.
I mustn't read too much into this, is
no.
what you're saying.
No,
it's not like you were trying to break a mold or make a statement or any of that stuff. You were just a 17-year-old girl who just didn't know what to do for that year.
And I really didn't want to know where I wanted to go. There was a brief moment when I thought science.
Yeah.
But I'm much more right brain than
are you?
The left wing logical mathematical thing. I can do, but it's
right.
takes discipline. It's much easier to. Yeah.
Do you find that it's more fun to talk to people who are also left brained, right brained, or I mean which is it you prefer? Because sometimes the creative people are more inspired talking to the people who are more logical. And vice versa.
I don't like extremes of either. People who can make no logical connection and who therefore in conversation cannot follow a logical line irritate me no end.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sitting around the dinner table and the conversation as a whole is going in a certain direction and then suddenly someone picks up a little minute footnote that someone has thrown in and goes off on that tangent. You know, I just go...
Usually in some vacuous, bizarre way, right?
Can I fetch you some more wine?
Yeah, get more drunk because you're more entertaining when you're drunk. And the same obviously goes for the opposite end of the spectrum, where you have people who are supremely logical, but they have absolutely no ability to socialize normally.
Yeah, and there's no color.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's clinical.
One thing leads to this, to this, to that. You
right. You've got to have a bit of both, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Now, when you were doing Carte Blanche, you used to do a bunch of different stories. You would do everything from, you know, I was teasing you just now about these people who must still come up to you and say, oh, I remember that story and that story.
No, what they actually come up to me and say is, so when are you and Derek going to get married?
Really? Really?
That's a real question. Not
seriously.
Recent, but it's a
good
real
question. Good Lord. People are so, people are so annoying.
Oh, it was quite sweet.
I
said to her,
huh?
We are. It's to it, other people.
Is that how the two of you were marketed, though, on
good
the show?
Good Lord. No,
to make
just,
it seem as though...
This is the level of... These people would turn on their TV on a Sunday. They'd see a man and a woman presenting a show together and go, they must be married. This is the level of...
You know, but it's...
And Carte Blanche, you would think, would attract smart people to watch it. Ha. Huh. Alas.
You know, you must remember that when we started, for 14 years, and it was actually a point of pride for us, for 14 years, we were live in studio together every Sunday afternoon.
That's incredible.
And if we weren't there, one of us wasn't there, the other one would say, he's on a shoot, blah, blah, or she's been blah, blah, blah.
I don't know. There's ever been a partnership on South African TV that lasted that
long. So it was. And at the same time, you must remember, we were, apart from the SABC, the only show in town.
Yeah.
It was way before the splintering that you have now. Now people choose with the same remote to watch either the Kardashians or the BBC.
Yeah.
Or
correct.
Then it was the SABC or us. So it was, I find it fascinating how it stuck in people's minds. You know, in 2 months' time, where are we? April, May, June. In 2 months' time, it will be 9 years since I left.
and people still just talk to you about carte blanche.
You know, the other thing I was, you know, the married thing is, was it once off. But what they do, and I'm sure they do it to you as well, is come and hunker down next to you in a restaurant and say, when you're with other people, and say, I've got a story.
Okay, no, I can imagine they'd do that to you. With me, they go, why, when are you going back on radio? Which is just the same, but you often get those questions too. Now, when these people, have they ever come to you with an actual story, or do you usually just know straight away this person is probably inebriated, they've got no idea of what reality is, they think that their aunt who found a whole bunch of deleted files on the USB somewhere suddenly has a scoop on the fact that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. It never really turns out to be a story, does it?
No. Of course, sometimes stories come from listeners. Come on, we can't diss our audience like this.
But also, what do they think you're going to do with it? You don't work with George and Derek.
Not in that moment.
Yeah.
So I say, you know, there's a contact button on the website.
I reckon you're responsible for 90% of those contact buttons being pressed. You should just give them Derek's email address. Make it his problem.
I do sometimes.
Okay. We won't tell anybody that. Now, this new show, I mean, because this has been going on, this is now season two, right? It seems to me that you get to interview such interesting people who are not necessarily well-known, too. I mean, you mentioned a couple of well-known ones. But Alan was telling me, and I didn't actually see this episode, but there was a woman who runs the Ponte building.
Oh, yes.
This woman. Yeah. I mean, this is incredible. She's an old lady, and she runs that place like a hostel.
Like the head girl.
Yeah. She locks people out of their apartment if they don't pay their electricity.
She's white and Afrikaans and in her late 50s.
Okay, so she's not elderly. I thought she was an 80-year-old woman.
No. But she holds, you know, holds them together, and don't you dare step over the line.
Gigantic Nigerian guys come to her and say, why is my electricity off? And she goes, because you haven't paid it. She takes her keys and she locks his apartment. She says, you're not getting in until you've paid. But I'll come and kill you. She goes, then you're going to have to kill me in front of these people. You know? She's hardcore. These are amazing people.
Yeah.
These are really the people who make South Africa such an interesting place and who keep it together. Because without her at that building, it probably would fall apart.
Yeah. You know, I really think that we get so overwhelmed by the noise. And the noise is often all about the same thing. At the moment,
boys.
I mean...
It's the president. The president, the president, the president. And Kandla, as he keeps saying.
And it just gets boring. Mm. You know, when something happens in that whole saga, I mean, here's the ANC, the Gauteng ANC making a statement. Okay, so they've made a statement. Okay, right, so that's it. There's nothing new added to that in the next 24 hours. But we keep hearing about it, we keep seeing
breaking
it.
News, developing
breaking
stories,
news.
Bullshit.
So, you know, really, let's look at some other stuff that's also happening.
What do you think, though, about what's going on? Because I'm sure this is a question that also people bother you with the whole time, because they assume, and rightly in your case, that you're informed. I mean, you are. You do listen to the news. You do read a lot. You are aware of what's going on around you, which is more than I can say for a lot of people who are in the media. But people come up to you and they say, Ruda, what do you think of what's going on politically or in terms of the economy or in terms of society in South Africa? What's your kind of barometer at the moment? Where are you in terms of what is going on?
We could have had Donald Trump.
Yeah. That's a scary thought.
No, but seriously, it's two things. The one is, don't look at the snapshot. Look at the long view. Look at where we've been. You know, I'm old enough to remember P.W. Botha quite personally. And I think what is happening in the ANC is in a certain sense parallel or similar to what happened with the National Party people, people who were also dyed in the wool, you know, Murch in Bien, National Party supporters. And P.W. took us to a point where we were almost ashamed to say that was our allegiance.
Yes.
And that served to loosen that hegemony.
And he was ousted.
And then he was ousted, of course, and, you know, and we had the 92, not election, what's the other one?
The referendum.
The referendum in 1992. And I don't think that we would have had a more than 70%, or was it even higher, I can't remember, yes vote in the referendum without the terribly low point of 85 and the Rubicon speech.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even before that, the information scandal. I remember I taught briefly at a high school. And I remember standing with the radio, and it was just before school in the morning, 7:30-ish. And there was the president, who was John Foster at that time, saying he knew nothing about the information scandal or the information spending, the spending on the citizen, on starting the citizen newspaper with state money.
Right.
And I remember standing there looking at the radio and thinking, I wonder if that's true. And then there was a second thought of, I'm questioning my president.
Yeah, how dare you? Yeah. Which for a lot of people is very alarming. And as a child, you would have felt alarmed.
Growing up as an Afrikaans girl in a Platteland environment where your dad, the teacher, the dominee, and then anyone above that was gospel.
Automatic respect.
Automatic respect, and you never questioned them. It's not even you never dared question them. You just didn't.
Yeah. Mm. And here was the president, and you suddenly found yourself going, I don't know if this guy's telling the truth. Everything you're saying here is so interesting, because this is a take that you really need the experience of, and that long lens of history, as I was saying. Mm. I had this conversation, not this very one. What you're saying here is quite, interesting. I think it's novel. It's original. I hadn't thought of comparing what Jacob Zuma is going through now to what Pierre Vibuerta went through in his time. It's a very good comparison. But I was speaking to Alistair Sparks a while ago, who was one of the journalists who spearheaded opening up the truth behind the information scandal. And, you know, people forget about that referendum.
Mm.
People forget that had to come before 94 came.
Yes.
Because what the government were really doing is they were saying to white people in this country, do you want to change, or do you want us to stay where we are? No vote would have meant we're not going to ultimately, you know, move forward, get things inclusive, start to make this country a 21st century country.
It's not only that, Gareth. You must remember, you know, youngsters like the other people around the table,
Flax and Sia,
have absolutely no. I mean, you never experienced it, but remember that every white boy.
My buddy's also 12, so yes.
Every white boy went to the army for 2 years.
Right.
And after that, I remember my husband going to those horrible camps, which were the biggest waste of time, for 3 months. Was it every year, or every second year? I mean, the economic loss and we were a completely militarized society.
Yeah.
It's as journalists in the 80s. The police could set up a roadblock wherever and say, you're not crossing this line.
End of the story.
We did not have a constitution.
It was a security state.
To refer
state,
to.
Right?
It was total security state, and we had states of emergency running one into the other. You know, it's not just that we didn't have the nice stuff that came with the change. We had a lot of very bad stuff.
Yeah, and people sort of underplay the role that all of that change within the National Party had on all the things that happened then outside, and ultimately the referendum, and then ultimately the elections in 94, the unbanning of the ANC, FW de Klerk coming in, all of that stuff, which greased the wheels that allowed for change to take place, at least the kind of change where there was a minimum of violence. But now we sit with this, and we mustn't underplay the importance of what's going on in the ANC. By the same token, right?
One never knows. You know, also from our own history, it took bloody ages before the National Party, the solidity of the National Party actually gave way. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right. And you never really appreciate history while you're living in it.
But yeah. Also because now we're the instant gratification generation.
Mm-hmm.
I want to change and I want it now.
Yes.
It mustn't take the next 50 to 100 years. It must take the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
I want it now.
Yeah. Free education next year.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care how you do it, but just make it happen because I want it and I want it now.
Who is going to pay, did you think?
Yeah, what is your position on that? Because there are a lot of very sober thoughts that are starting to come to the fore now. You know, it was all kind of revolutionary and exciting when this the Roads Must Fall and Fees Must Fall movement started last year. And now a lot of people are starting to get into the practical side of this. Mm. And what does it actually mean? And where should we be going? What should universities be doing? I mean, do you have an opinion on whether or not universities should be free?
I don't think it's attainable. Definitely not in South Africa, where, and I don't know, but I think it's there are very few countries, and they are the rich, the seriously rich countries, where the state can afford to make university education
well
free.
If you wanted to go to a really good college in America, it can cost you $100,000 for the year. I mean, that's out of most people's
and pockets. There was a discussion at Gibbs this week, and I just read about it now, that I forget who now, who said that careful, because if you cut off the funding, it will have to affect the quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are you
building? And then what do you want a degree for?
How are you going
to
build a science lab if you don't have money flowing in? So I think the government is doing an amazing job with NSFAS, with the Student Financial Assistance Scheme. And that has, I don't remember the figures for this year now, but I mean, last year they spent 15 billion on student support. So, and they've got a very good person in Sizwe Ngosana now at the head of that. So, they are doing, I think what we must do is us as ordinary people must actually notice that this is a national requirement that we have to educate ourselves, our nation. Mabali, your generation is coming through, and I see these young people, and they are, why are they demonstrating? Because they see education as this narrow bridge between a life of sitting with no hope and a life of possibilities. And we as a nation must really, this, you know, I'm going to start a church soon.
But your parents were both school teachers. This is in your blood.
Yeah.
I mean, you care about education.
Absolutely. But what I was going to say with funding is that we all have to make a contribution. Find a way. There are dozens of NGOs, of bursary schemes, of whatever. Whether you adopt a single child or whether you participate in a bigger scheme, I have one. It's called Readers Unite, and you can find it on the web.
No, tell us about that. Let's give it a plug, since we're giving a plug to Farana Dunga. Let's talk about this, because this could have a serious positive results for people. Go on.
You know, I was so fascinated. I was in America for my husband had a four month wonderful fellowship, and I just went along on his coattails. The best mode of transport, your husband's coattails. And I came across this organization, started in 1867 by seven women at university who pooled money to help a friend. Now we are, 140, 150 years later. This organization has 250,000 members across the States and Canada. They come together once a month for cake and tea. But they give $50 a year, each one. That's $12.5 million flowing into their coffers every year. Now that is crowdfunding.
Yeah.
With a serious impact. So that's what I thought with Readers Unite. I thought readers, because people who read and who can afford to buy books, you have a little bit of extra money, and you understand the impact of easily accessing knowledge and information and whatever. Give me the price of one book per year. Not the book, Yeah. The price of.
Yes.
So I started something called Readers Unite, and we work together with an NGO that's been running for 40 years, a study trust. And we try and top up, you know, kids who get the NSFAS bursary, that covers only academics, academic fees, books, maybe the res.
Mm-hmm.
How do you buy toiletries?
Yeah.
How do you buy airtime? How do you get home for a holiday if you come from Mpumalanga or KZN or whatever, and now you're suddenly in Braamfontein, where when you've never seen a house bigger than, you know, one story? There's a gap.
And this supplements that.
And we supplement that. We give the kids 40,000 rand a year on top of a NSFAS bursary. The state's making it difficult because they say immediately when they find out that you get money from anywhere else, they reduce what they give you.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Which is, you know, really dull.
But this sounds like a terrific initiative. I mean, this is, to me, you know, that whole idea of one person can make a difference.
Yes.
I mean, those old ladies in, what, 18-something,
yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
They made a difference then. You didn't need the internet to communicate with each other either.
It's especially incredible because most of us are walking around with the kind of mentality of, oh, well, every man for himself, and I don't care what your problems are because I've got my own. So you sort yourself out and I'll deal with myself. That's how most of us are operating.
I just have this, I don't know how to put it, this vision, this feeling, this perception of, as I say, a whole generation of young people coming through who are reaching out to a better life, really, literally, to a better life. And if we don't support them, it's our future which is on the table and which is going to come crashing down. We need to educate South Africa.
Urgently.
Yeah. I have this lovely young friend, Omar Gambo. I came across her in doing... I put together a little guide to support first-year students, and it was published at the beginning of this year called Grad, and... Investec sponsored the first 10,000 copies, which went out to the to students at the three Gauteng universities and Stellenbosch as a test. And so in the process of putting this whole thing down, together, I made friends with someone called Almar Gambu. Almar is the sixth of 14 children.
Wow. And her mother must be tired. Yeah.
And her parents, her dad is Zimbabwean, so they lost their business in Diepsloot. His child grew up in Diepsloot. Lost the business in 2008. The parents,
during the xenophobic riots.
The parents went back to them, where they are now subsistence farmers. I mean, this is really... And she stayed behind in Johannesburg with a cousin and a brother. They looked after themselves, two 17-year-old girls and a 21-year-old boy. It is now, where are we, 7, 8 years later? All three of them have degrees. And Omar has started working at Standard Bank as a in the legal department. She has a legal degree from WITS. And it's just, I mean, that kind of story can keep me going. Talk about happiness.
No, that is, you know, there's nothing better than that, actually.
Yeah. And that's what we need to do. We need to multiply that by millions.
Okay, so
come on,
everybody
has to. Leaders Unite.
There we go. Come on, get involved here. This is the way you can make a difference. What else are you going to do? Buy some stupid thing that you don't need?
Yes.
No, that's what people are going to do.
I
need a new iPhone.
And no. A new pair of shoes.
Well,
in your number, in your size.
Yes, and we could buy Caitlyn Jenner a pair at the same time. Ruta, it's a pleasure to talk to you. You know, you really could talk about anything, and you've got such interesting stories to tell, and you've met so many interesting people, but you yourself are a dispenser of great wisdom. So thank you for coming to share that with us this
morning. Thank you, kind sir.
It's always a pleasure to see you. Ruta Landman, everybody, and you can get the podcast, if you missed any of that, on cliffcentral.com, where you will find podcasts of everything else, too. Just to let you in on a couple of things that are coming up today, because there's always exciting stuff on cliffcentral.com. It's a Wednesday. I see that Andrew and Rory are ready to take us through with Frankly Speaking today. That's always exciting, and that's one that you don't want to miss. There's plenty of other good stuff since it's a Wednesday. Check out our entire list, our entire lineup on cliffcentral.com. And everything there, if you can't listen to it live, will be up later on as a podcast. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Mubs. Thank you, Flex. Thank you, Sia. Thank you to you. We will see you tomorrow. Here's what you need to know. Australians are outraged about the new $5 note. It has Queen Elizabeth II on it, and locals were hoping it would have something sexier on it, like Kylie Minogue, Nicole Kidman, or some marsupial. The Australian Reserve Bank has hit back by saying that in her day, Lizzie was quite a looker, and many Australians have rooted far worse. ISIS numbers are on the wane. Yeah, Washington says the terrorist organization is losing territory, and with it, members. Many ISIS members are simply considering retiring from terrorism, saying the novelty is starting to wear off. Added to this, the lack of medical benefits, poor leave packages, limited career opportunities, it's all starting to take its toll. In a recent poll on Terrorlicious.com, terrorist only ranked fourth on the dream career list behind call center manager, botanist, and ballroom dancer. Bad news on the terrorism front. And finally, Alistair Coetzer is about to start his first day as a Springbok coach. It starts with a meeting with SARU president Oregon Hoskins, who wants to tell Alistair not to trust SARU CEO Yuri Ru. He's then meeting with SARU CEO Yuri Ru, who wants to tell him not to trust SARU president Oregon Hoskins. And then both of them will meet him a little bit later on today to tell him not to trust Minister Figilim Balula. We will see you tomorrow. Have an excellent day. Be good. If you're not, take photos. No, actually, according to Ruda, that's a bad idea. Don't. Oh, there we go. All right, figured it out eventually. Andrew and Rory next. Frankly speaking, I see Chris Vick is their guest. CliffCentral.com.